On this 24th day of August 2011 in San Diego, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary, by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We are in Chapter 3 entitled Karma Yoga, text number 36. Arjuna Vacha Atake na prayukto yam Papam charati purushaha Anichanna bibharshneya Balad eva niyojitaha. Translation: Arjuna said, O descendant of Vrishni, by what is one impelled to sinful acts, even unwillingly, as if engaged by force? Purport: A living entity, as part and parcel of the Supreme, is originally spiritual, pure, and free from all material contaminations. Therefore, by nature, he is not subject to the sins of the material world. But when he is in contact with the material nature, he acts in many sinful ways without hesitation, and sometimes even against his will. As such, Arjuna's question to Krishna is very sanguine as to the perverted nature of the living entities. Although the living entity sometimes does not want to act in sin, he is still forced to act. Sinful actions are not, however, impelled by the supersoul within, but are due to another cause, as the Lord explains in the next verse. Om Gyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Milatam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master Srila Prabhupada opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and to all members of Sri Parampara. So this is kind of a distinct section beginning at the end of this chapter. I don't know if it's known by this name, but it seems to be nicely named as the lust section. That's the answer to Arjuna's question. It's karma that forces one to act sinfully, even apparently against one's own desire, and certainly oftentimes against one's own better judgment. And what is it doing at the end of the chapter here? Well, this is a chapter on karma yoga, so everything has to do with activities, the activities of the senses and the relation of the senses with the sense objects. That's what the senses do. And Krishna has outlined a way in which one can act in such a way that he doesn't incur any karma and gradually removes or decreases the fever of the sense, the desire of the senses for the sense objects. And the basic principle is one of sacrifice. Beginning in text 9, Krishna defines that sacrifice. Yagyartart kramanon yatra lokayam karma bandhana. One needs to perform activities that are in the mood of sacrifice for the Supreme, not in the mood of enjoying the fruits of one's activities. And if one does that, then there's no bondage. The activities that we perform don't bind us to this material world. That's the whole art, how to do that. And Krishna explains that that kind of activity, selfless activity, activity in the mood of sacrifice, is something that the great souls should do even if they happen to be self-realized, just in order to teach the world. Because the world really needs good examples, right? In this verse, in this chapter, we also had that a verse that's often quoted, yad yad atarati shreshtas tatadeve tirojana sayad pramanam kurute lokas tadanavartite. This is a principle universally used in advertising, that as a famous, or in this case, a shreshta, an honored person acts, people will follow. The mass of people will follow. They're always looking for some exemplar, some star, some hero in order to follow. So what the leaders of society do is very important. So Arjuna is contemplating leaving the battlefield, giving up his duty, and Krishna said that basically this will be a very bad example. One should stick with one's duty, even if imperfectly performed, because just the act of giving it up can create, especially if a great person like Arjuna were to do it, what to speak of Krishna. Krishna mentions himself in this chapter. If I don't need to perform. Krishna doesn't need to perform any activities. No one can impose a duty on Krishna. And yet he acts. In his latter pastimes, especially in Dwarka, he followed all the rules and regulations for Grahastha Ashram. He came in the morning to join with the other leaders of the city in order to deal with, problems and manage the city. In other words, he acted in such a way that he would be a good example for others. So, therefore, it's all in question. All of this is in question of what you do and how you act, right? And that's the key. That's what Karma Yoga is all about. So now comes this question, which and this whole section, which I've always found very illuminating, is that, okay, you know how to act, right? The whole idea, this is a book of knowledge. So we know, one knows you should act in such a way according to Jagya principles of the Vedas, and yet we still don't do it. What is it that is impelling us to act sometimes against our own best interests, even knowingly? This is what Arjuna's... Anichan. Even if you don't desire it, somehow or other, you did it in this, that head-slapping period, when you say, what did I just do? This is what people who are controlled by the mode of passion go through. So that's the introduction to this section. The powerful force that seems to force us to act in such a way that is against our own best interests. That's the introduction. And Krishna will now answer in 6 or 7 verses. Any questions on this question of Arjuna's? Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Kama esha krodha esha. Rajo guna samudbhavaha. Mahashano mahapapma. Vidyenam yavairinam. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, it is lust only, Arjuna, which is born of contact with the material mode of passion and later transformed into wrath, and which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. Purport. When a living entity comes in contact with the material creation, his eternal love for Krishna is transformed into lust in association with the mode of passion. Or in other words, the sense of love of God becomes transformed into lust as milk in contact with sour tamarind is transformed into yogurt. Then again, when lust is unsatisfied, it turns into wrath. Wrath is transformed into illusion, and illusion continues the material existence. Therefore, lust is the greatest enemy of the living entity, and it is lust only which induces the pure living entity to remain entangled in the material world. Wrath is the manifestation of the mode of ignorance. These modes exhibit themselves as wrath and other corollaries. If, therefore, the mode of passion, instead of being degraded into the mode of ignorance, is elevated to the mode of goodness by the prescribed method of living and acting, then one can be saved from the degradation of wrath by spiritual attachment. The Supreme Personality of Godhead expanded himself into many for his ever-increasing spiritual bliss. And the living entities are parts and parcels of this spiritual bliss. They also have partial independence, but by misuse of their independence, when the service attitude is transformed into the propensity for sense enjoyment, they come under the sway of lust. This material creation is created by the Lord to give facility to the conditioned souls to fulfill these lustful propensities, and when completely baffled by prolonged lustful activities, the living entities begin to inquire about their real position. This inquiry is the beginning of the Vedanta Sutras, wherein it is said, Atato Brahma Jigyasa. One should inquire into the Supreme. And the Supreme is defined in Srimad Bhagavatam as Janmadyasya Yaton Vayadita Tascha, or the origin of everything is the Supreme Brahman. Therefore, the origin of lust is also in the Supreme. If, therefore, lust is transformed into love for the Supreme, or transformed into Krishna consciousness, or, in other words, desiring everything for Krishna, then both lust and wrath can be spiritualized. Hanuman, the great servitor of Lord Ram, exhibited his wrath by burning the golden city of Ravan. But by doing so, he became the greatest devotee of the Lord. Here also, in the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord induces Arjuna to engage his wrath upon his enemies for the satisfaction of the Lord. Therefore, lust and wrath, when they are employed in Krishna consciousness, become our friends instead of our enemies. So now the answer is very forthrightly given. It is kama. Now, kama normally means, in common parlance, sex desire. But it means more than that in our vocabulary. You know, it's like sex desire, etc. That's certainly the most powerful binding passion or desire that one has. But in addition, there are unlimited other ones that follow from that. And all of those together, kama simply defined as the desire to satisfy one's own senses. This is the definition given by Krishna's Kaviraj. And prema, so you have these two like sort of different manifestations of the same energy, the enjoying energy. One is kama and one is prema. The original is prema. Now prema is what we're striving for. That's really the, internally at least, the goal of all bhakti yogis is to attain this state of love of God. Now, it's expressed in so many different services, and therefore Krishna, Srila Prabhupada always said, you know, pure devotional service. Pure devotional service. Because without service, there's no question of love. Just like a mother, if she loves a child, well, how does she express it? So many different services. Takes care of the child, suckles the child, makes sure he's protected, educates the child. That's all activity. So pure devotional service, or prema, pure love for Krishna, that's the goal of our practice. And it's a 180-degree counterpoint, if you will, is kama. Prema means desiring to please the senses of Krishna. Kama means desiring to please our own senses. They're compared to like two kinds of metal, iron and gold. Iron and gold have some qualities in common. They're both metal, they're both hard. But one, there's a radical difference. So the kama is compared to iron and the prema is compared to gold. So what Prabhupada explains here is that kama is nothing but prema transformed. That ardent desire, if you read the Krishna book, you read the 10th canto, and you read about the love, you know, the activities of the gopis and Mother Yashoda and the Krishna's friends in relation to Krishna, you'll see that there's never a period like we have here in this world of kind of just static emotion. You know, we're kind of, you're just kind of dulled out and you're looking for that next emotional high, you know, something, you know, some relationship, a movie, a drug, something, you know. But there's so many, you know, kind of dull spots in normal life, isn't it? But in Krishna Leela, there's never any dull spots. There's always this one high to another, one high emotional high to another. And that high emotional state is their ardent desire to please Krishna. If you study the Leela, let's just think of the Leela with the friends, you know. So in the morning, it describes at the beginning of the chapter 13, I believe it is, Krishna wanted to join with all his friends and take the cows out, you know. So he comes and he plays his flute, or plays, I think he blows his horn, and suddenly all his friends gather. And they've all got their cows, and off they go, you know. Now, what are they doing there? What are all those friends doing? They're responding to Krishna's call. Oh, Krishna wants to go out. Yes, we want to be with him. Now, finally, you know, we were separated at night. We were sleeping. We had to do it. We were at home. Now we can go join Krishna, you know. So there's this love. In other words, they just love being with him, you know. And whatever he wants to do, you know, he's playing with them. Sometimes they're winning the little battles and, you know, and games that they're playing. Sometimes they're... But when the bottom line is that Krishna's enjoying himself like anything. He's covering his divinity, and he's playing with these boys on an equal level. But he's the center of attraction. It's never that, you know, Krishna's off somewhere and boys are playing some games amongst themselves. You'll never read that. He's always in the midst of the whole thing, you know. And then some excitement will come, then some demon comes, you know, and Krishna saves them, or whatever, you know. But there's always that relation to Krishna, and it's all for his pleasure. So it's an exchange of of loving pastimes. That's the center. The same thing with the gopis. You know, they have their families, they have their children, you know, but when Krishna calls with that flute, it's all behind them, you know, and they're out, going out there for his pleasure. So, now, just think of, now think of our world, you know. How does that passion, that obsession, if you will, for serving Krishna, which is at the highest level and for which there is no bad effect, you know. I mean, when we have some obsession in this world, it's a disease. It's in the psychological medical dictionary, right? You have to do something about it. But there's no bad side effect there. But in this world, that passion for serving Krishna, which is healthy for the soul, is transformed in our obsession with serving our own senses. We're protecting it. We're the center. That's called false ego, you know. And everything centers on us. And so even if we have a family and love, ultimately we're the center of it, you know. And as described in the morning classes, how, you know, if there's some disruption and the father can't provide anymore, you know, that creates tension in the family. I mean, everyone knows with all of this unemployment, there's a whole lot more domestic disturbance going on. The guy is home all day watching the TV, hoping that the resume will come back with some acceptance, you know. He's been out for the last 6 months looking for a job, can't find a job, comes back, feels worthless, can't provide for the family, you know. What happened to that little world that he built around himself with the wife and the family and the house and everything, and he was the center? But he's not God. He's not Krishna, you know. And so ultimately it collapses and it creates just the opposite. There's no pleasure there. You can't play. The play at being Krishna doesn't work, you see. So that's false ego. That's kama. Kama eventually leads to krodha. That's why Krishna says, kamesha, krodhesha. There's no kama without krodha. Krodha is anger, in this case, wrath. Wrath is heavy-duty anger, right? Now, what's the effect of wrath? Well, Prabhupada explains in the purport, wrath is transformed into illusion. If you go back a chapter, you'll find this, you know, wonderful progression. Kama krodo vijayate. Same thing. Krodha bhavati sangmoha. That's what Prabhupada's quoting. He's saying that, well, how does kama manifest in this world? Well, you know, you got the radar out, right? Where is there, and the mind is thinking, where is there something to enjoy? Where is there something to enjoy, right? And if it finds something, boom, it gets fixated on it. Maybe a member of the opposite sex, some food, some experience, some movie, some whatever. So now we're enjoying, right? So meditating on the object of the senses, you become attached. And then if you really engage again and again, you become really attached. And that's called kama. So sangat sanjayate kama. But kama can never be fully satisfied because the senses are limited, the mind is limited, the environment that you're doing it is limited. And therefore you become frustrated. You know, either the object that you're enjoying is no longer available, or your ability to enjoy it is not the same, because there's that satiation point. The senses are limited, the brain is limited, right? And then comes anger. Now anger, krodha, can also manifest in other forms. If you can't, you know, express your anger at the perceived blockage to your kama, to your enjoyment, then it gets turned inward and around, and then you get into depression, you get into different psychoses and neuroses and things. You know, that's also a result of frustrated desire, they have. So that's those two things, and that's a matter, you know, a symptom of the mode of ignorance. When you get depressed, you want to sleep more, perfect mode of ignorance symptom, right? Too much sleep, madness, that's another symptom. And prone to rage and, you know, at the slightest slight, that's it. Anyway, you understand what I mean. You'll fly off the handle and start raging at somebody inappropriately, you know. So this is what happens when the soul, originally in the pure atmosphere of the spiritual world, comes down and comes in contact with this world, the modes of nature. Why are we in contact? Why didn't we stay there? That was our foolishness. You know, because we wanted to be the center of enjoyment instead of making Krishna the center of enjoyment. Why? There's no answer to the why. You know, but it happened. And as Prabhupada explained in the next purport, I believe, or one or two down the road, that this kama can be sublimated, he doesn't use that word, but purified, back into prema. It's very difficult, but it can happen. And that's the process of devotional service. But the important thing to understand that this is our real enemy. Your enemy is not out there. The enemy is in here. The enemy is material desire, kama, and it is the mind and senses and intelligence that are infused with material desire. Because this kama is like an enemy will take over the strategic points. And what do we have? We have our intelligence, we have our mind, and we have our senses. And all of them can be saturated with kama. And then we need rehabilitation. We're not in a healthy condition. So any questions on this verse? Kamesha Kordesha. If you're into memorizing, I would memorize these last six verses. Start with the English. Start with the English and then go back and do the Sanskrit. All of this is very central to our philosophy. Oh, Mahapapa. This is where sin comes in. This is when we come under the control of material desire and we don't care about any rule or regulation. That's where sin comes in. All right, now how does this lust act? What does it do? That's the next verse. Dumenavrete vandir. Yatadarsho malenacha. Yatolbe navrato garbhas. Tata tinidam avritam. 38. As fire is covered by smoke, as a mirror is covered by dust, or as the embryo is covered by the womb, the living entity is similarly covered by different degrees of this lust. Purport. There are three degrees of covering of the living entity by which his pure consciousness is obscured. This covering is but lust under different manifestations, like smoke in the fire, dust on the mirror, and the womb about the embryo. When lust is compared to smoke, it is understood that the fire of the living spark can be a little perceived. In other words, when the living entity exhibits his Krishna consciousness slightly, he may be likened to the fire covered by smoke. Although fire is necessary where there is smoke, there is no overt manifestation of fire in the early stage. This stage is like the beginning of Krishna consciousness. The dust on the mirror refers to a cleansing process of the mirror of the mind by so many spiritual methods. The best process is to chant the holy names of the Lord. The embryo covered by the womb is an analogy illustrating a helpless position, for the child in the womb is so helpless that he cannot even move. This stage of living condition can be compared to that of the trees. The trees are also living entities, but they have been put in such a condition of life by such a great exhibition of lust that they are almost void of all consciousness. The covered mirror is compared to the birds and beasts, and the smoke-covered fire is compared to the human being. In the form of a human being, the living entity may revive a little Krishna consciousness, and if he makes further development, the fire of spiritual life can be kindled in the human form of life. By careful handling of the smoke and the fire, fire can be made to blaze. Therefore, the human form of life is a chance for the living entity to escape the entanglement of material existence. In the human form of life, one can conquer the enemy, lust, by cultivation of Krishna consciousness under able guidance. So here's the problem, is that by surrendering to lust, by coming under the control of lust, you become covered. Now what's covered is explained in the next verse, and that is our knowledge. Our knowledge is covered. The more we're covered in this way, the more helpless we are. Like these trees, the plants in general, the insects, the birds, the animals, they have no hope in that life form of making any progress. They're just stuck, you know. Now we can help them a little bit, you know, give the cat a prasadam and chant to the trees. That's all to the good. And that may speed up their passage into the human form where they may get association with devotees. That's fine. But basically speaking, this process, this knowledge is for human beings. And the human beings are compared here to the fire covered by smoke. you get the smoke away and you rev up the fire a little bit and you have a real blaze going. So there's a chance. And that's why, the real devotees of Krishna, they're always looking for someone who has a little bit of spark of Krishna consciousness. Or they're trying to ignite that spark. That's what preaching is all about, what the teaching is all about. Because with the intelligence, one can understand one's position and then not act simply under the sway and the demand of the senses. Just like a person who is an alcoholic, Obviously, they're under the command, the control of demon rum, of this higher force that they can't control. But they know that. If they're intelligent, they know that. And they seek an environment or a method by which they can overcome this control. They'll go to AA, get good association, get on a program, whatever, so that they can break this attachment. So that's an example of someone using their good intelligence to conquer over the demands of the lower self, which have come under the sway of something very much undesirable, isn't it? So that in the same way, all of human society, all of conditioned world, is under the control of this kama, of material desire. And they don't even know it. The knowledge is covered. This is the thing. So we need some access to a knowledge that's transcendental, beyond the pollution, the contamination of this material desire. And that's where the books come in. And that's where great souls like Srila Prabhupada come in, who are not under the control of this lower self, and who can pry open our eyes, like we say before every class, and awaken us to the truth. Then comes this long slog of living the truth. But at least we know, But we should always remember that's such a precious thing, to have that knowledge. And we can lose it. That's the whole point of this. It can again become covered. Just as it became covered once. We can become. And how does it become covered? You come in under the control of material desire, and then it just fades into the background. Just like all other kinds of knowledge that we may have known. I mean, how many things did I learn in the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th grade that, who cares, I don't remember anymore. It doesn't matter, because I got absorbed in something else. So this knowledge is meant to be lived every day, every moment, and then it becomes part of you, and you see the world differently, and you're on a transcendental plane, beyond the sway, of the mind and the senses. This is the yogic platform, and it can be achieved practically by bhakti yoga only in this age. Really, it's the most practical, and that comes out in the Gita, So this is a very important information, because it analyzes where are we actually at. And you can see the whole world moving. You see these people walking down the street. I don't know about you, but I think one of the most absurd things in the world is this surfing. I guess I've never done it. I've never felt that rush, of a guy riding. I know that. But it's just, what a pathetic waste of human life, Here's these young people, basically. Although there's one old lady, she's in her 50s, she's carrying a board out, I said, why? What is it? Well, there's some rasa there, there's some pleasure, obviously. But, to be so well, they're seeing me, the Hare Krishnas are over here, So they have this, but that doesn't compute to them. Just as I see them as absurd, they see me as absurd. Oh, you're right near the beach, but you're not going out. And I think, you're right near the temple, but you're not coming in. But who's really, ultimately, logically speaking, getting the best benefit ultimately? Let's face it, you're out there with the fishes. You're acting like a fish. Good chance you're going to become a fish. Is that a wise use of human life? See the misuse. So the real devotee sees, this is such a tragedy. At least give him a Hare Krishna. Invite them in somehow or other, contact them, But that's really how we see the world. The whole world is moving according to that, there's delusions and illusions. So we need to wake up from that and then get the knowledge and act on the knowledge. If you act on the knowledge, then it really becomes part of you. And Krishna reveals more. The very same verse that you read yesterday, you read it again today. And you'll see more happening. It's so deep, this Bhagavad Gita. You know, so it's this section. I love this section. It's very, it just strikes so true to me, the whole thing. All right, let's go on to 39. Avritam Ganamitena Gyanino Nityavaidina Kamarupena Kaunteya Duspurena Analena Cha. Thus the wise living entity's pure consciousness becomes covered by his eternal enemy in the form of lust, which is never satisfied but which burns like fire. Purport. It is said in the Manusmriti that lust cannot be satisfied by any amount of sense enjoyment, just as fire is never extinguished by a constant supply of fuel. In the material world, the center of all activities is sex, and thus the material world is called Maitunya Agara, or the shackles of sex life. In the ordinary prison house, criminals are kept within bars. Similarly, the criminals who are disobedient to the laws of the Lord, are shackled by sex life. Advancement of material civilization on the basis of sense gratification means increasing the duration of the material existence of a living entity. Therefore, this lust is the symbol of ignorance by which the living entity is kept within the material world. While one enjoys sense gratification, it may be that there is some feeling of happiness, but actually that so-called feeling of happiness is the ultimate enemy of the sense enjoyer. And that sentence always struck home. You know, that should be a t-shirt or something. It's like, the happiness you feel in enjoyment, and what's going on here? You know, this is on the beach. People come here from all over the world to enjoy San Diego. The zoo, the beach, whatever, you know, the sun. But that happiness is the worst enemy. You know, I mean, that's such a radical position. Krishna says it very explicitly in the fifth chapter here. Yahi sang sparjita boga dukkha yona evite. It's the same thing. That the enjoyment you enjoy from the senses is the source of your misery. You know, now that can be an extremely depressing thought, you know, and people don't want to believe it. If they have no inkling of the higher happiness you can achieve without sense gratification, which is the happiness that comes from serving Krishna and being Krishna conscious. You know, people are ignorant of that, and therefore, since we're pleasure-seeking beings, we have to go for sense gratification. So Krishna consciousness, because of the chanting, now Prabhupada mentions that, I want to mention that also. This Yatar Darsha Malena, a darsha is a mirror. So this is one of the coverings. So that, of course, recalls, for those who know, the first verse of the Shikshastika, Chaito Darpana Marjanam, that the chanting of the holy name is the best process for cleansing the mirror of the mind. Now, what's the mirror? What's the dust on the mind that has to be cleansed? It's lust, the dust of lust. Forgive me, but it's too obvious. So, Chaito Darpana Marjanam, the chanting of the holy name cleanses that dust. So the point is, that's the means by which you can sublimate the sense gratification mood, the kama, back into prema. That's the means by which you can begin to see yourself as you really are. Not as a consumer, not as an enjoyer, but as a servant of God. And which position is the source of real happiness. So that's mentioned in the previous verse. Now here, avitam gyanametina, here, the gyanina, we are known as the gyanina, the knowers. But here is those who are full of knowledge. This is our intrinsic state. What's happened to that knowledge? It's been covered. Avrita means covered. Our knowledge is covered by that lust. So the more that we yield to the demands of material desire and the senses and all this, the more that our knowledge will be covered. And the more that our, you know, transcendental knowledge will be covered and will be helpless. You know, I like to compare it, and this will come up in the next verse. How, you know, when there's a battle that goes on, warfare, what does the enemy try to do? Well, the first thing the enemy tries to do is to make you blind and deaf so that you can't see them. I remember when the first or perceived them, that when the first Iraq war took place. What was it called?
The Gulf War,
yeah. Anyway, you remember that it was 1990.
Desert Storm,
thank you. 1991. So the first thing that we did was to knock out the radar. You know, that's what the Germans did too, but they didn't do a complete job. Radar had just been invented in World War II. And the British were using it to find out where the Luftwaffe was. They were completely outgunned, you know, by the Air Force, the Germans. But they had the advantage of knowing where they were, you know, because they had the radar that had just been developed. And so they would send up the RAF and they would harass them and knock down a few, you know. And so the Germans weren't able to conquer Britain for that reason, because of the RAF. The Royal Air Force? Yeah, in World War II. So, I mean, but after that, everyone understood, okay, the first thing you do, if you can, is to knock out the Air Force. I would knock out the radar so that they can't see where you are, and then you can freely bomb them like as much as you want. So that's what the Americans did. So now back to our real enemy. Right? We're in a battle here. We're on a battlefield, and this is our enemy. That's the whole point. The comma, it covers your intelligence. It takes over your mind and your intelligence. So that's what you know about. That's how you see this world, right? The senses, the mind, and the intelligence. So then you can't perceive. You don't know that this is your enemy. You don't know that the enemy is within the gates. I'm living with my worst enemy. My lust-saturated mind, right? The mind could be the enemy. Well, the mind that's absorbed in sense gratification, that's the real enemy. So we're at a disadvantage here. You know, if our mind, our senses, our intelligence, what are we going to work with? Well, this Bhagavad Gita, the words of the guru, or the Adi Guru, the original guru is Krishna, can, in spite of the fact that the enemy has taken over the intelligence can become freed. It becomes freed from the thrall, from the control of lust. And we can start to think. That's the advantage we have. Over the animals. Sorry, my voice may not make it much longer. Hare Krishna. So we are the knower, but we're covered, our knowledge is covered by this eternal enemy, Nitya Vardhana, in the form of lust. And it's never satisfied, it never gives up. You know, there's always something more to want. This is what the material life is all about. Maya, her job is to make us want more and more and keep wanting forever, lifetime after lifetime. As we fulfill some desire, right, then we become satiated, and we look at something and we want something else. So we want the same thing again. Or there's some little variation. Not this woman, that woman, right? Not this food, that food. You know, and as you grow older, there's always some unfulfilled desire in the material sphere. That's the whole idea. And those unfulfilled desires take you again to another birth. Start over again, try to fulfill them. You see, you're in the thrall. So that's why it's Nitya Vardhana. It's the eternal enemy. You know, never gives up until you are able to break free of the material world entirely. And you can only do that by taking shelter of a stronger force than this kama. And that stronger force is actually love. Is pure love for Krishna. He is the master of all of these energies that are imprisoning us. He's the master of Maya. And he says in the 14, in the 7th chapter, 7:14, Daivyesha Gunamahi Mama Maya Durachaya, that this Maya energy of mine, you cannot overcome it on your own. It means you cannot overcome lust on your own. But if you surrender to me, you can easily cross beyond this material world. What does that surrender mean? It means to try to fulfill Krishna's desires rather than our own desires, the demands of our senses. Use those very senses which are demanding sense gratification in the service of Krishna. We don't see the beautiful woman on the beach, we see the beautiful deities. We don't go to the restaurant, we have a nice feast here. We don't hear the cinema songs or rock music, whatever they sing. We hear Hare Krishna. You know, it begins with sound. Sound is the most important holy name. And we find, and very quickly, if we take shelter of that sound and all of its expansions, we find
the desire for all of these things lessening, reducing, letting us, you know, giving a little, it becomes slackened. And if we're really strong in our determination, then we can remain fixed. And the material desire, the lust, even the sex desire, gradually, it doesn't control you as much. It's a fact. It's a science. So that's the only way out. So it's never satisfied, but burns like fire. But Krishna will say there is a way. You have to use your good intelligence. All right, now comes the analysis, text 40, of how that lust covers the knowledge of the soul. Indriyani manobuddhir asyadishtanam uchyate etaiva moha yatyesha gyanamavritya dehinam. The senses, the mind, and the intelligence are the sitting places of this lust. Through them, lust covers the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders him. Purport. The enemy has captured different strategic positions in the body of the conditioned soul, and therefore Lord Krishna is giving hints of those places so that one who wants to conquer the enemy may know where he can be found. Mind is the center of all the activities of the senses. And thus, when we hear about sense objects, the mind generally becomes a reservoir of all ideas of sense gratification. And as a result, the mind and the senses become the repositories of lust. Next, the intelligence department becomes the capital of such lustful propensities. Intelligence is the immediate next-door neighbor of the spirit soul. Lusty intelligence influences the spirit soul to acquire the false ego and identify itself with matter, and thus with the mind and senses. The spirit soul becomes addicted to enjoying the material senses and mistakes this as true happiness. This false identification of the spirit soul is very nicely explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.13. This is a verse spoken by Krishna himself. Yasyatma buddhi kunape tridhatuke svadhi kalatradisho bhauma idyadihi yatirta buddhi salilena karanchit janeshva bigyeshu sa eva gokraha. A human being who identifies this body made of three elements with his self, who considers the byproducts of the body to be his kinsmen, who considers the land of birth worshipable, and who goes to the place of pilgrimage simply to take a bath rather than meet men of transcendental knowledge there, is to be considered like an ass or a cow. So, as I was explaining, this enemy of ours, you know, has taken over these strategic positions, as Prabhupada says, and through them our knowledge is covered. So this mind, you know, mind is the key. Mind is what directs, you know, the senses. The mind is the center of all the senses. So yoga always involves control of the mind, fixing the mind on the object of meditation. So our object of meditation is Krishna, right? All attractive. So as soon as we become absorbed, even a little bit, in thinking of Krishna, immediately the soul becomes attracted. And that attraction to Krishna is the direct antidote to sense, the desire for sense gratification. There's a battle going on in our heart, whether, you know, to let ourselves become addicted or further our addiction to gratification of the senses, or to be addicted, to become addicted to thinking of Krishna, hearing of Krishna, serving Krishna, meditating on Krishna. And factually, when you contemplate, you know, Krishna's activities, his form and qualities, it completely satisfies the mind. The mind can only find a resting place ultimately in Krishna. Otherwise, this restless mind, you know, is never satisfied in anything material. We think we are. That's the, you know, look at, you want to see the perfect, you know, example of the restless mind. Like a week before Christmas, you go to a toy store, and you see the kids, you know, running around pulling their parents here and there, you know, the latest. Well, didn't we just do this last year? What happened to all the toys we bought last year? You know, or last month? You know, well, they're all broken on the floor or in the corner somewhere. You know, the latest thing, and the guys who make these toys or video games, whatever they make, you know, ever more expensive. they know just how to capture the kids' minds, you know, the latest, newest, whatever twist. So those kids, they're a bundle of sense energy, you know, looking for gratification, isn't it? Every parent knows that, you know. And they know that if they don't gratify the kids' senses, then they won't find any peace, you know. So they're willing to pay, okay. You know, this is their expression of love, you know. But there's never any satiation point. The kid grows up a little bit, the other toys, you know, the seven-year-old toys are on the floor, now we have eight-year-old toys, nine-year-old, it goes on. And then when you get older, more expensive toys. This car, that car, that's, you know, woman having drugs, whatever, music. Goes on and on. Ideas, you know. And where is the point where where the end point comes? You tell me. You know? Where is that person, the 50-year-old, the 60-year-old, the 70-year-old? Now I've come, yes, I'm perfectly happy. And never come. As you get older, you know, on the material level, there's just more and more lamentation and depression. All the things you once could enjoy that you can't enjoy anymore. The things that, you know, you wanted to enjoy that you couldn't enjoy. This person, that person, people died, or, you know, that you loved or something, and whatever. It's a whole list, you know. But what about the devotee? So where's the devotee? You know, where are their minds at? Hey, it's never fresh, you know. I mean, I marvel at these shlokas. You know, I've known some of these shlokas for 35 years or more. It's not like they could become stale. You know, Indanila mani mandrala varna pullani pukusamanchitakarna Krishna labhata kashura sihari sundaro jayat kundu bihari. There's nothing stale about it. You know, it's not like some cinema song or some rock song from the 70s that's completely out of style. Totally in style. Indanila mani mandrala varna. You know, Indanila, this is a sapphire. Indranila Mani, Manjula Varna. Krishna has this complexion of a polished, you know, sapphire. Indranila Mani, Manjula Varna, Pullanipa, Kusamanchitakarna. And he's got this fully blossomed jasmine on each ear, like his earrings, you know. You can almost smell them, can't you? Beautiful jasmine flavor. We have jasmine, a certain kind of jasmine blood blooms out here sometimes. And then karna pullanipa kusamanchita karna krishna labhata kushora sihari sundaro. So he's very beautiful with his broad chest. He's got this gunja necklace around, you know, jayati kunja bihari. All glories to Krishna in the groves of Vrindavan. Now when you know, okay, I learned that when I was, I don't know, 35 or something in Los Angeles. That was one of the first verses I learned from Krishna Krata. You know, he was translating Stavamala. So now it's 35 years down the road. Am I getting any less enjoyment from chanting that? I don't think so. Oh, you chanted that when you were 63, but when you're 70, you'll be stale. No. You see the difference? I'm telling you, this is the difference. It's not getting stale. It's not getting any, it's not wearing out. Well, where is the material thing that doesn't wear out? You show me that. How much chocolate can you eat? How many drugs can you take? How much sex can you have? You know? Come on. So that's the difference. So this verse, now just we'll finish with this, meditating on this wonderful verse of Krishna's. Yasyatma buddhi kuna betri datake. This is the first definition of someone who is gokara. Now gokara means either a cow or an ass, or it means the ass who carries the hay for the cow. In other words, you're an animal if you have this mentality. Thinking that I am, Atma Buddha, I have the idea that I am this bag. This is a bag. Let's face it, it's a bag. Kunape, with three dhatus. Mucus, bile, and air. That's what's inside. And that's me? You know? Though there's a much nicer bag of mucus than this one over here. I'm sorry, that's the truth. This is Krishna speaking. So then you're asked, Swadhi, that belonged to me, my wife, etc. Wife, children, bank balance. That's mine. That's also animalistic. Everything belongs to Krishna. Boma Ijadi, that the land where I'm born is worshipable. America, USA, USA. Animalistic. Yatirta buddhi sadilenik. That a place of pilgrimage is simply a place, a holy place to take a bath. You know, probably the Jordan River, you know, people come, or, you know, the Ganges River. If that's all you do is just go bathe in the Ganges, that's not very intelligent. You have to find out the realized souls there and hear from them. That's real pilgrimage. So these are some of the ways in which human beings degrade themselves. And who's not doing that? Who's not thinking that I am this body? You know, if you point out that foolishness of it, then they get angry. You know, so this is why we need this knowledge. Sometimes it's like a good kick in the head. It says, "Tasmat utsridja, no, tato duksangam utsridja, satsu sajetu, satsu sajeta." Come on, help me out here. Satsu sajeta, buddhiman. Santa evasya chindanti mano vyasangam uktibi. This is a verse by Krishna in the 11th canto. Therefore, once you give up all bad association and take to good association with devotees, with sadhus, because by their words they can cut off the deep attachments of one's mind. And that's what all of this is about. That's why these books are so important and why this institution is so important. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. Thank you.